Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome. Coming up today, we've Agnes Wells talking about her journey to becoming a life coach and mentor. We've Gwen Wilkinson, who made an extraordinary journey by water from Bow Island in Fermanagh right down to the River Barrow in Carlow on a little 12-foot boat called Minnow, which I have to say, was a lot smaller than I expected.
This is Minnow.
This is Minnow.
What? I had a picture of something like much more.
Are you serious?
Substantial.
No, this is substantial. It's paddle powered, arm use only. So you sit in and it's just your arms. Yeah, using the paddle to paddle across the country. Yeah.
Brilliant story of an extraordinary journey. Gwen Wilkinson coming up later on. I'm really looking forward to catching up with singer and songwriter and troubadour Christine Beauville, who does French song like nobody else, and she's bringing her new show to Belfast this week. Paula McIntyre is in the kitchen doing bean burgers, Paula.
I am, John. Black bean and beetroot burgers. And honestly, same sizzle. See, you know when you make a beef burger patty and you get that nice slap of the mixture?
Uh-huh.
And they taste great.
Now this week we've got the sad news about the death of explorer and adventurer Noel Hanna on the slopes of Annapurna in Nepal. I spoke to Noel a number of times on the show, generally before he was heading off on another extraordinary adventure, and it always struck me how calm and cool he was about going to do these really unusual, extraordinary things. He'd climbed Mount Everest 10 times. In 2018, he became the first person from the island of Ireland to successfully summit and descend K2. And there's a list of firsts to his name. So to remember Noel and hear a bit more about him, I spoke to Robbie Marsh, mountain guide and founder of Mourne Mountain Adventures. Robbie knew Noel well and interviewed him for his own podcast. So here's a clip of the great man himself talking about his passion.
Some of the views is spectacular. Probably two of my best has been one from the south side of Everest and one from the north side of Everest. Whenever you're going for summit, there's like a lightning storm, a thunderstorm below you, the lightning just below the clouds, which is just spectacular.
I'd actually met Noel through a podcast that I've got called The Inspirational Runner. So I do a lot of long distance events, ultra running. And Noel popped up on my radar because he had done some of the world's most iconic ultra races, the Comrades in South Africa being, I suppose, the most iconic. And then we have the likes of the Badwater, which really stuck out for me. So Badwater is marked as the toughest foot race on the planet. So it's a 135-mile race through Death Valley. It's the hottest place on the planet. I think it's like 40 or 50 degrees Celsius. So it was from that, and I linked up with him then in the podcast. Obviously, I knew about his mountaineering, but I didn't know at that point, you know, exactly how amazing his achievements were. But what really got me was I was just after 40 and I was looking for a change in my career. And what I was really interested in was how did a sheep farmer's son from Dromara become this global expedition leader and guiding people up mountains such as Everest and things like that.
And how had he done it?
What happened was he'd actually entered a 5-day stage race in the Himalayas. It was a 100-mile race. So he decided to do this with a friend just to raise money for charity. From memory, I think he raised about £20,000. Him and his friend went over and they actually won the race. And that's when he first put his eyes on the Himalayas and seen Everest for the first time. He sort of fell in love with it straight away.
I think it probably came from running in the mornings. We were up and down, I was up and down the mornings probably 2 or 3 times a week. Probably from about 27, 28 years of age up. Before that I was just in the gym and maybe running 5Ks in the running machine or something like that, but never really into my fitness. Played football, played rugby and things like that at school, but
it's
never
quite unbelievable.
Never nothing outside.
And the Himalayan race then, was that a real shock to you then that you were right in front?
Certainly was, yeah. Couldn't believe it.
From that, he started doing all these adventure races, and that's where his mind went to then about bringing other people into the mountains. Because after he'd climbed Everest the first time, I suppose he was just able then to build a career around that, which is what everybody dreams of doing, really, isn't it? It's trying to create your passion into what you actually do for a living.
But after chatting to him, he inspired you then to take a big leap in your own life.
Yeah, and my intuition was strongly directing me into some sort of direction. I was really keen to talk to Noel, how, you know, because Noel went to school in Northern Ireland just like the rest of us did. But then he's this global expedition leader. He lives in South Africa. He's got a phenomenal business. I'm really interested on people's journey and how they become successful. After speaking to Noel the first time and listening to his story, I remember going home then just starting to write a plan on how I was going to set up a business myself, mountaineering. The thing about Noel was, though, he was such a pain to interview because he just normalizes, you know, 8,000 meter mountains. So he was a very humble person. I was always at him to write a book, which he never did, unfortunately, because I remember him saying the truth doesn't sell, but it does. You know, he just normalized everything so much. Climbing an 8,000 meter mountain to him, he would have talked about it as if it was somebody just going up Donard.
Yeah. He came in to the studio here and I talked to him a number of times. And there was that extraordinary kind of calmness about him. And as you say, he normalized what he's doing to the point where you forget, I think sometimes, that actually every time he was doing something like that, you are putting your life on the line. What you're talking about is an extremely dangerous thing to do.
Yeah, but Noel was a very safe person, though. He was always making the right decisions. And I suppose being a guide, given that perspective on things, one of his biggest draws to the mountains was seeing people achieve. And he loved that. But I remember he told me stories, you know, they were only a couple hundred meters from the summit, and he made the decision, you know, to turn around. But on the flip side of that, some summits, he was the first person to summit in the history of the world. You know, that's just mind-blowing to me. There's people that walked on the moon before they'd walked on some of these summits that Noel had.
I didn't have a home because I was like, Mom, Dad didn't want me. Dad didn't want me. That's what was in my head. And I just call that I don't have a home. Mm-hmm. And my dream was to have a home, just home, you know, one home where I can be, you know, and establish, you know, there.
So how did coming here change your life then?
Like I said, you know, I came to Northern Ireland. That was 17 years ago. I can't believe it. It's so quick. How is time flying? 17 years ago, and I was feeling sorry for myself. I think, you know, that's when you feel sorry for yourself, is building your insight, and you just start to feel depressed. You start to build up anxiety, and you start to feel nothing worth it. You start to be insecure with this everything. And when you start and think about this all past, and you don't cut this from yourself, I do believe, you know, that's what we are designing our life. And I said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I can't complain. This is what's happened for me to be the person who I want to be. I've changed totally. I've changed, you know, and I said, you know, I set up my goals. And I think, you know, this is the most important now for people to set up some goals. Lots of people, they don't have a goals. When you have no goals, you have no motivation. Is this right?
Mm-hmm.
You have no motivation because you just sit and say, I have nothing to do.
You have nothing to aim for.
Yes,
nothing to
exactly.
Focus on.
I set up my goals and I said, no, I'm happy what's happened to me. I'm best friends with my dad, with my mom. You know, I just realize that's happened for them, not for me. You know, they have a problem. That's still my parents. I love them. I was blaming them for, they divorced, they should be with me. But now I'm actually happy because I said, that's my parents. I love them. Doesn't matter what's happened with them. I want to build up myself now. And when I start to change and I start to think positively about my life and about myself, what I said, I actually said to my friend, you know, you need to find yourself. Then you have to start to love yourself. And then when you start to love yourself, your life is changing. Because we can't change life if you're not changing yourself. To change life, you need to start with yourself. And I said, that's my.
And you went into the beauty business when you came here, first of all.
Oh yes.
For a number of years.
Yes.
And then what was the thing that made you move from that and go into life coaching?
I have a degree in cosmetology in Poland, and we have my subject in Poland was psychology, and I always want to be psychologist. But during the COVID time, when I seen this all, what's happened to people? People get anxiety. People have this suicidal thoughts. I said, I am able to help. Not maybe everyone, because I'm not gonna be everyone cup of tea, but some people probably can get something from me, because I said, you know, like you said before, everyone's stories can improve someone's life. Mm-hmm. And how this happened? Yes, I said, you know, I'm gonna apply and I'm gonna be psychologist. I'm gonna do master. But then I start to go into the law and everything, and I said, no, it's not for me, because it's beautiful, but I can't sit as a psychologist and listen to people what's going on. I'm not the calm person. I'm a crazy, I have to say, you know, and I know on my example.
Because the psychologist, you mean that they sit back and they don't, you want to get involved, you want to say, you want to give advice.
Yes, because I think from my experience, as a teenager, I needed someone who would tell me, wise up. Just do it this. You can't do this. That's not right. You know, and as a psychologist, you can this. I said, I'm going to change to the mentoring, you know, because I want to shout sometimes on my client and say, no, that's not right. Obviously, you can't tell them what to do, you know, but you can give advice. And some they will take advice. Some would be like, it's not for me. You know, not for everyone works the same thing. But that's why I try to build up.
And sometimes in all our lives, sometimes you need somebody in your life. You need somebody in your life to say, wise
exactly.
up.
Exactly. I need
wise
as well.
Wise up. Just wise up.
I need as well. Yeah. Sometimes, you know. But I think, you know, that's the point for me that I said, you know, I'm going to help people.
Off to the kitchen now. Paula McIntyre is doing black bean and beetroot burgers with roast onion and gherkin mayo and pickled tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
That sounds delicious. I actually, this is one of those things that genuinely I would love to be able to. I always kind of I look at the veggie option and more increasingly now I find if I'm out somewhere, if I'm eating something, I'll go for the veggie option if it looks kind of exciting, which it does now more and more.
It does more and more. More and more. Sometimes, you know what I love is you go to a vegetarian restaurant, you don't really realise it's vegetarian. You know what I mean? And it's that you sort of think afterwards, oh, there was no meat in that. And that's the way it should be. But it should be, you know, the food should be exciting, shouldn't it? And I think in this day and age, if I had a restaurant, I would be pushing making the vegetarian dishes exciting, because vegetables are a lot cheaper than meat.
Absolutely.
And if you treat them properly, you know, you're going to get lots of flavour from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the good thing too, John, about making your own veggie burgers is, and I'm not, just sometimes when you look at the side of the packet, of you know, of vegetarian burgers,
mm-hmm.
you know, you sort of need another page of ingredients.
They extension. Can be quite processed.
Yes.
So this is just, this all starts with a tin, I presume, a tin of black beans.
Tin of black beans. Tinned chickpeas, tinned beans, they're so handy. You don't have to do that whole soaking and draining and cooking, and then 1 minute they're lovely and they're nearly ready, and then the next thing you turn around, you've got really, like soup.
Yeah.
So when you open a tin, you're sure, you know. So what I did was just a tin of black beans, give them a wee rinse. And now you can do this a couple of ways. I actually did it in the food processor. Just you give them a bit of a pulse. But if you've got a good old-fashioned potato masher or a fork even, just bash them, you know, to break them up. And then the beetroot, just peel the beetroot and coarsely grate it. And at this stage, I would season that a bit, you know, with a bit of salt and pepper.
And are you talking about a beetroot, like a proper old dirty beetroot? Okay.
Yeah, raw beetroot. And
not
again,
the stuff in vinegar that you get in the supermarket?
No.
Not the wee slices, no.
I get that stuff. Oh, that just upsets me. I still have, you know, when you're, you know, that all that, you know, remember people used to pickle beetroot when you were younger?
Yeah.
And then they'd sit down and eat it.
Jars of it.
Yes. Good diet. That would be good for a diet, because you would just not want to eat them. And then I fried off a red onion and some garlic. If you don't have a red onion, don't worry. I just was sort of going with a red theme in this. And then mix that all in and give it a really good mix together. You know, if either the food processor, just get in with your hands and bash up those beans and everything. And then there's porridge oats in this. And then some breadcrumbs. If you're gluten-free, you can get gluten-free porridge oats, mm-hmm. and then forget about the crumbs, just up.
And that's kind of to hold it together.
What it does is kind of makes it manageable. And I've got a squirt of brown sauce in there because I like brown sauce, and I think it seasons things up nicely. It gives it a nice wee tang.
Class. The Waters and the Wild is a beautiful new book about the trials and tranquillities of a journey on Ireland's waterways. It tells the story of Gwen Wilkinson. Gwen's an artist based in County Carlow. She built her own boat, a 12-foot canoe called Minnow, and she paddled it all the way from Bow Island in County Fermanagh down through Lough Erne, into the Shannon, across the Royal Canal and into the River Barrow, an extraordinary solo journey of some 400 miles. Now, we couldn't both fit in Minnow, so I went to meet Gwen at Lock 21 in County Westmeath on the Royal Canal in the more spacious and more comfortable barge that her family keep on the water.
So you come in here and you just have to kind of, lots of steps, we're kind of descending down into the hold of the boat now.
We really are. Yeah. All that rush of the water disappears. Oh, it's so lovely and warm.
Isn't it great?
There's a wee stove.
Yeah, just one stove heating the whole boat.
This is gorgeous.
Yeah, so it's a whole self-contained living space that you can travel around.
I was saying to you on my journey down here, you know, we get so used to motorways, good
service stations.
Yeah. I have no idea how many rivers I would have crossed or how many did I cross the canal at some other stage, maybe on the gym, I'm not sure. It's a whole hidden world here.
Yeah.
And so peaceful and quiet. But was this was part of your childhood?
Yeah, that's all I can remember is boating, summer holidays. The minute summer came around, it was onto the boat. The length of the Grand Canal, down the Barrow, around the Shannon.
Then you spent years travelling the high seas, sailing on the oceans.
Yes, yeah. I just have a bit of a bug for adventure and travel. I went to college in Galway. I was dying to escape Ireland and the small little island. I met a sailor who happened to be shipwrecked off the coast of Ireland. I helped him put his boat back together again, and I ended up sailing off with him across the horizon.
This is like an opera.
It was very romantic and exciting, and it suited me perfectly. In my 20s, heading off on the high seas, it couldn't have been better.
And where did you get to?
Ball. The whole world. I explored the whole world by boat. It was a complete eye-opener.
You right there, doesn't it? That's the voice of Christine Beauville, singer and songwriter from Glasgow, whose interpretations of the songs of Edith Piaf have won her huge acclaim. She's built up a very loyal following here in Northern Ireland. She's coming back to Belfast this week as part of the Cathedral Quarter Arts Festival with a new show about not just Piaf but the wider French pop scene in the 60s. And I'm delighted to say she's on the line. Morning, Christine.
Morning, John. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you very clearly. How are you? You're
wonderful.
In Oxford, I believe.
I am just north of Oxford. I played in Oxford last night with my PF show at the old fire station. Had a great night, yes.
That's been a huge success.
It has. I've been doing it for a million years. I've been singing PF a lot longer than PF sang PF, to be honest.
But you have this, and I'm not exaggerating, there is this community of Christine Beauville fans in Belfast and further afield here who never let you down every time you come over.
You know, it's very easy to say this, John, about cities when you're about to play there, but I have said it time and time again, in and outside Belfast, it is, if not my absolute, in my top two places in the world to play. I don't know, I first played there in this same festival 12 years ago, and I've come back every year since, at least once, and I've played the Lyric and the Mac and the Irish Language Centre and obviously on your show, and Belfast has just embraced this Glaswegian like nowhere else, I have to say.
This Glaswegian, and the thing is, I mean, you are, when you're sitting there and you're listening to Christine Beauville singing the songs, I mean, it just, the same way when you listen to Je ne regrette rien, the recording of yours, you become this little French singer, which is extraordinary given that you hated French at school. And this is Sermon Ile de Rêve. Thanks to all our guests this morning. Thanks to Agnes, our life coach, Gwen, the canoeist, and Christine, la chanteuse. Thanks as well to producer Helen Bambury. And thanks to you for listening. Take care. Talk to you soon. Dans la pénombre, enlacée l'année longue.